Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the podcast. Today I'm joined by international, World Cup and Olympic footballer and former captain of the New Zealand women's international football team. Welcome to the Power Hour, Bex Smith.
Hey, Adrian. So cool to be here.
It's great to have you. So excited for our conversation today. And I think before I dive into all of my questions, because I have loads, I think it would be great for you to give the listeners of the show, if they're not familiar with your journey, with your career, if you could tell us a little bit, maybe take us back actually and talk us through your journey in and career in football.
Yes, it's a long one, so I'm going to try to be quick, and because I get bored of hearing my own voice when I talk about my football career. But I was born in LA, but my parents are Kiwis, I had this opportunity to play for the New Zealand national team. So I kind of played all sports when I was younger. I actually never really wanted to be a footballer. It was never a dream of mine. I actually wanted to be a professional surfer. But my mom said, absolutely not. You're not going to go around on beaches from 15 years old. So I got my education, played at Duke University, ended up captaining the team there, and then got noticed by the New Zealand national team. And in my senior year of college, I actually missed my last semester and went on the 2003, like about 100 years ago, World Cup qualifying tournament. And we lost to Australia at the time. And I thought, hey, that was cool. We got to, you know, almost make it to a World Cup. And I thought, okay, that's pretty much it. Graduated from college and went back and started working in LA. And then Australia left our confederation. And then, so I was captain of a national team. Hadn't played football in like a year, for fun, but not really at any sort of high level, and realized I was captain of a national team that could go to World Cups and Olympics because our qualification was a lot easier. And I thought, you know what? I should just do this. So I basically got a letterhead from New Zealand Football and sent it out to everyone I found on literally Google, to all the European leagues, because there was no league in the US at the time. And went and paid my own way for tryouts and went to Norway and Germany and ended up getting a contract with FFC Frankfurt, which at the time was the best club in Europe. And I genuinely still to this day don't know how I got a contract there, but ended up going from there to Sweden, to Australia, and then back to Wolfsburg, where we were ninth place in the Frauen-Bundesliga in Germany when I came. And four and a half seasons later, we ended up winning the treble. So the league, the cup, and the Women's Champions League. So it was a mad, mad rush when I was playing. And then from there, I went into the business side. I had a really bad knee injury, had to stop. And then I worked at FIFA. So I organized the Women's World Cups for about 4 years. And then the last year, I did more strategic planning. How do we use competitions to grow women's football globally? How do we get more girls participating? How do we get more women's coaches, female referees, et cetera? And then since then, it's just been sort of a weird path of working in content, working with brands. And then I started my own company, Crux Sports, about 3.5 years ago. And that now works with loads of different types of stakeholders in women's football. So that's pretty much it, I would say. Oh, I did 2 World Cups and 2 Olympics along there as well.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's epic. And you know what I'm hearing when listening to you talk, Bex, because I am an entrepreneur, I have an entrepreneurial spirit, and clearly you do too. And I feel like, you know, often people talk about barriers, right? Whether it's in sport, whether it's in entrepreneurship, whether it's just females, just living, you know, being a woman of color, it's like barriers, barriers, barriers. And I feel like some people see those barriers and they are very real. I'm not saying they're not there. They are there. They are real. And it kind of, for whatever reason, it can really stop you. It can be a brick wall. It can hold you back. It can derail your confidence. Can give you imposter syndrome. I can relate to all of those things. However, I feel like there's almost like a gene. I don't know what it is, but there's a gene that makes people go, oh, but what about this? Oh, but what about that? Well, I'm just going to find a way. I'm going to find an alternative. What's the next option? I always talk about strategy A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and just keep on going. And so even though then you said, oh, I just, you know, got some letterheads and sent them out. That's that entrepreneurial gene, which says, there's got to be a way. Why not me? Like, I can figure this out. I can make this happen. Do you feel like, even, I don't know, looking back, where did that come from? Do you think that's innately who you are? Did someone encourage you and kind of say to you, you know, you have to be the one to lead? Or was it just, you're just born that way?
Yeah, such a good question, isn't it? And by the way, congratulations on your entrepreneurship, because this podcast is rad. I love it. Among all the other things you do, but obviously. My parents, I think, are the ones that instilled it. So they're Kiwis. So they, you know, were born on an island, a tiny island in the South Pacific. So there's some kind of adventurous spirit, I think, for most New Zealanders. And my dad was an entrepreneur, my mom as well. And it's just always been instilled in me that I was a bit, like, I've always been different. You know, my parents always were the ones that had a funny accent or spoke weirdly. I really love sports, but I also really love the classroom. So I was quite a geek in school. So that was kind of, either you're like a good athlete or you're really geeky, but I kind of really enjoyed both. And I've always just, I felt like I've always thought of it differently. People have often asked me, you know, are you more American? Are you more Kiwi? I'm like, I really just have never felt like I'm 100% anything. I'm just kind of this free spirit. But my parents are very much like, go get it. Every time I talk about them, I get a little bit emotional. So apologies. We might have to, you know, edit out some of my crying during this next 40 minutes. But they're just like wonderful humans who have always encouraged me to just go get it, you know. And when I had a degree from Duke University, an economics degree from Duke University, which is like, you know, a very kind of quote-unquote prestigious degree, they were, and I said, you know, I kind of think I might want to just go kick a football for like a couple of years. They were like, go for it, you know. Mm-hmm. you're young, you only have a certain window to be able to do that, give it a try. So I think that's been my biggest influence in that respect.
Yeah, and that's such a great message to hear, I think, because whether you're a young person, whether you're a parent, you know, I think it's a good message to hear, because often, you know, there's so much pressure now in the world. You know, even your kids start nursery and people are looking at their, you know, what boxes are going to tick and what their handwriting is and what their, I don't know, there's just all of these things. And I think there's a lot of pressure for people to kind of decide what's the path, you know, what's the, as you said, if it's this prestigious thing that's going to give you opportunities, give you economic security. You know, sometimes people will look at sport, and we're going to talk about, you know, women's football, and then maybe they've got a young person, especially female, who wants to play sport, and kind of going, is that a risky option? Is that going to be a real job? Is there much opportunity there for you to have a career? Actually, you know what, just do your A-levels, just stay in school. Yeah. Just do something, you know, just go and get a job, get a 9-to-5. And I think hearing that is probably, yeah, really encouraging for a lot of people, that your parents actually not only gave you permission but actively encouraged you to say you've got one life. And also, it's like you said, that window, if at the end of it it had been different and maybe it hadn't been the success, so what? You just, yeah, go and do something else. It's not the end of the world.
That's totally it, isn't it? They always, do you know what they've always said to my sister, both my sister and I, they said, follow your passion. Because there's so many people in life that go with, this is what you should do. You go to school, you get married, you have your kids, you know, buy your house, you do all these things. But how many people do you look at, and when you speak to, they really have this passion, this fire inside of them? And it doesn't matter what it is. You know, my sister ended up being, she's a cinematographer now, but if we had looked at her 20 years ago and said, she goes, I want to make movies and I want to do films and I want to be in TV and I love cameras, and she just is like this technical geek, that people would have been like, yeah, but there's zero jobs for women in that industry. But she's just absolutely amazing. And the other thing they always said is, like, different. Every time we use the word different in our house, it's a positive thing. Like, ooh, should we go there? That's different. You know, we had our favorite restaurant as a family was this Japanese noodle house called Takafuku. And we were the only white people in there. It was all Japanese people. We'd walk in, what's that? Like, know all of our names. And like, we were, it just, weird is cool. Like, different is cool. So it is 100% a mentality.
Yes, I love that. I love it. I love it. Okay, let's talk about women's football, because it has grown significantly in recent years. And I suppose, yeah, reflecting back from when you were in the sport to now, I guess, how have you seen that evolution? And how do you think that, what needs to happen essentially for it to continue to grow?
It's been really amazing watching the growth of it. And, you know, like I mentioned from the beginning, even being with Wolfsburg, from ninth place out of 12 teams, going all the way up to not just winning the league, but winning sort of the big three titles at home and then the international. What's been really interesting to see is that when you put proper resources behind the sport. You know, and I don't just mean money. I don't just mean cash. It's really the right people, the right type of expertise, the right type of people that understand the expertise that can then take that money and the investment and do the right things with them. The sport just genuinely has no limits. And obviously with everything that grows at such a rapid pace, there's always a, let's say, a fear or a risk that it can go quite quickly in the wrong direction. And I think that, you know, we've seen men's football and how it's been developed for so many years. And, you know, I love football. I love watching the game and being a part of the game. But there's quite a lot about the men's game that I find quite toxic and quite negative. You know, when you look at what happened in the men's Euros finals, a lot of the violence that happened, a lot of the homophobic slurs and the racist slurs that we hear when we go to men's games. Not everywhere, obviously. I'm not painting out the entire men, you know, men's football to be like that. But I do think that the women's game has a really unique opportunity to be one of the best vessels for really, really positive social and cultural change. Because when you look at the audiences, the types of fans that follow the women's games, it's very inclusive. You know, we've had one of the first female athlete, or the first other athlete after Kaepernick to take the knee for Black Lives Matter, was Megan Rapinoe, one of the biggest female football stars. And they really, they take on these social justice campaigns quite easily. It's just kind of part of the culture of the women's game. And, you know, there's not that much there is homophobia in different countries, but, you know, you look at the US and two of the women on the US women's national team were married, and, you know, it's just not really an issue. And I think that when people look at that and when fans can follow it, then it starts to create a really nice environment for people to come together, to celebrate, to have really, really young, a little bit, let's say, older, all coming together to celebrate a beautiful game and just support women and sports in general. So I do think that it's amazing to see the growth, but I think we're at a really critical junction now where we need to have the right people with the right expertise leading the game in the right direction.
Yeah, it's such a good point that you raise around the culture of football, and like you said, around the word inclusive, because even, you know, again, nowhere near the level, but, you know, as a mum with a son who plays football and also does a lot of other sport, I really see the difference in the culture, and it's not inclusive. I don't personally think it's that inclusive. You know, my son's quite laid back, he's pretty easygoing, you know, he's not like the best in the team, he just kind of goes because he enjoys the social aspect of it. And so I kind of, you know, encourage him to play because I think team sports, you know, has a lot of benefit, you know, lots of things other than just the exercise, but, you know, there's so much you learn from being part of a team. However, you know, he does other sports like tennis and athletics, and it's such a different environment standing on the sideline. You know, the parents aren't screaming at the kids, the dads aren't swearing at the referees, people aren't, like, it's seriously, I'm like, these kids are 12 and 13. And if that's happening at that age and their parents are doing that and even going to watch sport, you know, when you take your kids to watch games, and we encourage people to say, you know, buy tickets, go and watch live sport. But I remember the first time my ex-husband, when he wanted to take my son to watch the football, this was years ago when he was maybe like, I don't know, 7. And I remember thinking, do I want him to go and sit in the stands of like a professional game where people are, like I said, shouting, swearing, like throwing, literally, it's like the environment is so, and even safety, I was like, is it safe to take a child there? Which is kind of wild, because you would never think, okay, we're going to watch track and field, or we're going to go and watch the tennis, and actually I'm going to be worried about, you know, my safety. But it's a real concern, and I think you're completely right for the women's sport, and hopefully the men's as well. Like, it really, I don't know, it really needs to change, because I think there's a lot of parents as well who don't want their kids going into that environment and learning that behavior and learning those habits and thinking, well, that's okay, because, you know, that's what they see modeled to them.
100%. And you mentioned the referees, and I think that's just a really great example, because I work with the referees, the PGMOL here in England, and also a little bit with the UEFA referees. And if you look at the environment that they have to work, I mean, referees, their job is to protect the health and safety of the player and to uphold the laws of the game. So really, they're quite important, you know, to football. And actually, all players really should respect and want referees to be there, because if not, probably they'd get hacked from behind and ACLs and injuries and all over the place, right? And yet you see how much abuse they get verbally on the pitch while they're playing, but also on social media and in social media and online and through the media. It's just absolutely disgusting. And when you think that they're humans too, it's just, and the amount of work that they put into trying to do these two incredibly hard, but very, very noble things in football. I was talking to one of the referees just a couple of days ago, and he said, you know, Beck's the dangerous place to be right now, I think, well, in football for sure, but even beyond football, is the VAR room. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, think about it. Like everyone is analyzing every single movement. You're on TV, and there's just this incredible hatred towards these humans who are actually trying to do good in the game. And it's mental. It's disgusting. So I really think that men's football can learn a lot from women's football.
Amen. So I pulled out some stats because I love stats. I always talk about being a bit of a data geek, you know. It's much feeling stuff's good, but I'm like, show me the numbers. So I was interested to figure out, okay, what is the lay of the land right now in the UK, specifically around women's football? And yeah, is it increasing? Because we might see, you know, a few more things on TV, but like what's really going on? So I guess a positive news story, and this is actually from a report from December 2023. It's Active Lives Children and Young People Survey. And the positive news, because there's some not so good, but the positive news here is that since the Lionesses won the Euros 2022, there's been a huge increase in the number of girls playing football in the UK. I say a huge increase, the percentage is not that huge, but I think it was around 80,000 young females now, you know, participating in sport. And surely that, I'm hoping it's going to have a bit of a snowball effect, and that the more girls, you know, look around and see, oh, this is something that I can be a part of, whether it's social, whether it's good for their, obviously their physical health, their mental health. I'm really hoping that snowball effect is going to increase. But I guess this really highlights the need for female role models in sport. So again, do you see that changing now? Do you see that we're, you know, football, female sport is becoming more mainstream? And does it actually matter if it's female football or if it's just female athletes in general?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think that football obviously reflects life, right? So you see what I've seen on the football pitch, and then working at FIFA and seeing the world governing body and how they govern football is very reflective of the world that we live in. And also then going into the business world, very, very similar issues, right? So I think the more inclusive we can be in football and in life, it then reflects also in business. And I do think that a lot of people take their cues off of sports, because if you look at like who are the big role models now in the world, it used to be our presidents, it used to be, you know, people in government. Nowadays it's kind of almost a joke, you know, who's sort of running different countries, and you know, that's not really, I don't think, a place where youth is looking for real leadership. Okay, so then where else do we look? Well, it's athletes, I think. You know, people are looking at the top players as people they want to aspire to be, and therefore it's so vitally important that these role models are positive. And if you look at football, how it was created by men, so it was, you know, built by men, the laws of the game were written by men, it was played by men, it was refereed by men, and mostly men when watched it. And so when you then have a sport that was very exclusive, and mostly white men as well, but when it's been so exclusive, then how do you now shoehorn women into this thing that's already being created? You know, broadcast cycles are bought 5 to some cases 10 years out, and so on TV it's already scheduled for 5 to 10 years. And so we're looking at trying to get more media coverage for female athletes, and you go, yeah, but they've already paid for the rights, they've already scheduled everything, we know when Champions League is, we know when Europa League is, we know when Premier League is. So how do we then start including the women's game into it? But certainly, the more that we see, and I've seen it when we had, for example, we had the Women's World Cup under 17 in Jordan, right, in the Middle East. And that was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had, because you could see really the culture starting to shift, that you could see these young women who were wearing hijabs for the very first time on the international stage. You saw full stadia of men, women, like the totally diverse culture watching and cheering for these young women. And then there's this cultural shift of, okay, so women can run the tournament, you know, a FIFA Women's World Cup. Girls can play football. They can then start to see that women are very capable, you know, if they can play football and they can run tournaments. And then they're starting to be a lot more allowed into business environments and running companies. And I think it's really important, because we need more diversity at the top level, because it does, you know, ultimately it impacts the bottom line, but it also just makes the world a better place, doesn't it?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And again, there's that crossover between sport and role models and business and decision makers, because ultimately that's what we're talking about, right? It's the people at the top of the pyramid who are making decisions. It's the people that are looking around and giving opportunities and hiring and firing and all of that. And I think that, as you rightly said, women are incredibly capable. You know, obviously in March, we see all this International Women's Day and we see all this stuff highlighting these incredible women. And, you know, we see articles, my entire social media feed for about a week is just celebrating these amazing women doing amazing things, most of them you've never even heard of. But even that, sometimes it just feels a little bit kind of performative and you're like, okay, cool, but what actually happens? And so I guess going off script now, but I think often people will say, okay, we need more advocacy. So we need more decision makers. Let's say if there's a whole board in an organization of men, then they need to create spaces for women and we need to add them. Other people kind of look towards women and say, you know, you speak up, use your voice. You know, it's on you to kind of, you know, forge your way in, or if there's no seat at the table, build your own table, you know, girl boss. And all of that. And you kind of go, oh, come on. And we kind of heard this rhetoric again and again, but it doesn't really seem to change. I think, you know, it's tiny. It's like percentage points. It's like, okay, there's 0.04, you know, VC funding in the UK going to women of color, like 0.04, you know? So that even if it increases by 50%, it's still going to be less than 1%. Like, seriously.
That's mad.
It's crazy, but it doesn't seem to change. So yeah, I guess, what is my question here? My question is to you, as I said, someone who I feel like really is, you know, like, and people use these words like pioneer or trailblazer, but you've done and continue to do things your own way. Do you think it's a case of, yes, women have to kind of beat the door down and be like, I am not going to take no for an answer? Do you think it's a case that men need to step aside and go, welcome, come on in? Because, you know, we know it's not always I don't know, we're not always welcome. Yeah, what's been your experience or advice, should I say? What advice would you give to someone listening who goes, actually, I know there's something I want to do and I want to get there, but it's not happening right now?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I get asked it, you know, a decent amount of times, and I have a lot of young girls and women that ask, you know, how do I get in? How do I break it? I think the answer to it is it totally depends, which isn't very helpful for most people. So...
But it's honest.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, when I was at FIFA, for example, we used to have all of these programs where they would spend all this money trying on women's coaching. So female coaching courses or female refereeing courses. And then when we actually had the tournaments, so under 17, under 20 Women's World Cups, I'd look at the coaching staff and they'd all be men. So, for example, first under 17 tournament I ever went to was in Costa Rica. I went to one of the first team arrival meetings. The entire staff was all men. So these were 15, 16, 17-year-old girls all across the entire world playing in their very first tournament, and they were staffed by a bunch of men. So no female doctor, no female, like, coach, nothing. So all this money that FIFA was spending on this side was then, like, the ultimate pinnacle of the sport was just represented by men. So in that instance, you know, it took me a year and a half, but I pushed through to try to get at least one female in the medical staff, that because FIFA pays for these staff members too. So it was like, well, we actually have control of this. One female member in the medical staff and one female coach. And out of the 8 for youth tournaments, or like 16 to 25 that you have in the, don't tell me you can't do 2 out of 16. Don't tell me you can't do 2 out of 25 staff that you bring that can be women. And I promise you, I had a few federations, so countries, having very serious conversations, looking me dead in the eye and saying, we have no female coaches in all of our country. And these were big countries I was talking to, Adrian. Like, I'm not messing with you. So that took a year and a half. We finally pushed that through. So in some cases, I think you have to use, you know, minimum standards to shift the dial, because in some federations, in some countries, there's such a cultural barrier that you can't do anything. And in other instances, you know, for example, in competitive businesses, so I really do believe in, you know, free market competitiveness, that really drives quality, and competition drives quality. And I do think that the companies out there that are having to compete with other companies, if they don't have a diverse, inclusive policy, they're just not going to get the best people. And eventually those types of companies will be phased out because they don't have the best talent because they're not open to looking in areas where they haven't looked before, like all of women or all of people of color or all gay people or queer people or whatever. It's just, so I think it's a very, very nuanced, very, very tricky discussion. But I think the answer is it's multi-layered, it's multifaceted.
Yeah, but it's also, again, the entrepreneur in me was kind of thinking, okay, for young women and young people listening to this, or parents, you know, your parents encouraged you to pursue sport and your passion, and it obviously led to you being, you know, incredibly successful as a sports star. But think of all the other things around and supporting, like you said, the coaches, the physios, the all of that, that we need more females in there. So I think as well, like encouraging more young people to pursue those careers as well, because there's going to be, as you say, doors opening up and people need to be ready to step in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I also wanted to talk to you, I guess, about, you know, on this show I've talked a lot about physical training, I talk about nutrition, I talk about sleep, I talk about essentially all the things when you think about personal well-being and performance and how managing and essentially optimizing our well-being can help us perform at our best in work and in life. Now, I think that often people might look at someone like yourself and be like, okay, sports, tick, you know, you've got a lot of energy, you know, you're articulate, you're smart, all of those things, and assume that, I don't know, you've just got it down. When it comes to your well-being, that's it, tick. But it's more complex than that, right? Mm. So I guess whether it's now or maybe throughout your career, like, have you, I suppose, what would you say has helped you to maintain and optimize your own well-being, both physical and mental?
Oh, that's so good. I love that you ask these questions and I love that you guys discuss this, because I really think, you know, where the world is going to, there's so many more pressures and there's so much more expectation that the world should provide for me as young kids are growing up. And actually, I think happy is really hard. I think that life is difficult, life is challenging. And I think if you have that mentality that you're going to have to work really, really hard to be successful at whatever it is that you decide to do, be healthy, be a good mom, you know, this type of job that I want to have, being a good friend, you have to work, and you have to work really hard, and it's consistent. So it's almost, it was really funny. I was in the gym one time when I was just starting my professional career, and this big wrestler came in. And I was talking to him and he goes, yep, it's same old grind, daily grind. He goes, you take 5 steps forward in the day, you sleep and you go backwards. So unless you're constantly training, you're actually going backwards. And I just thought, oh my God, why do we even do this? You know, like, why are
go
we
back to bed.
Why are we training 5 hours a day to then actually know that the next day we're just going to have to do the same to even just stay at that level and maybe add in another hour to get the tiny smidgens 0.001% better. And I think it's that mentality. It's that elite athlete mentality of, I'm going to have to put in a lot of hard work every single day. And if I want to get better, I'm going to have to put in an additional 5% in addition to that hard work every single day. So I really think that as you see all this stuff on social media and as life seems to be getting easier for everybody on social media, I think there's this expectation that life is actually quite easy, and it's really just not. And that's not to say that life is hard and, oh, you know, dismal and woe is me, but, you know, you have to work at that stuff. As you know, you know, you're a mother of three. It's like the amount of energy that you have to summon every single day probably to be able to even do that. So I draw on a lot of energy from other people. I'm an extrovert, so I rely quite a lot on my parents, on my sister. I have really good friends. I have an incredible partner, incredibly supportive partner, plus two beautiful children. And I think, you know, it's being appreciative of the things that you have, but it's constantly like, okay, what's on for today? Like, let's go, let's attack this day. Because if you don't, you're going backwards. If you're not moving forwards, you're going backwards.
Gosh, it is so great to hear that from you, Bex, because I'll be honest with you, I feel like I used to, let's say 5 years ago when I started the show, I definitely feel like people would tell me a lot. They'd say like, oh, you know, I listen to your podcast because it's motivational, or maybe I follow you on social media because it's motivational. And this word kind of came up again and again. And I didn't choose that word. You know, I was never like, I'm Mrs. I'm Motivator, but it, yeah, but it just came up again and again. And sometimes, you know, what you're good at is just what you're good at. Mm. So I was like, okay, cool. Like I can encourage people. I can motivate people. I enjoy that. But what I was thinking about is that I used to, I think, have a bit more of a like hard line with this kind of stuff. So like you said, I was, you know, when I was training for my second marathon, I think it was, I was talking about, you know, you can do hard things. That became my thing around, you know, people be like, oh, you must love running because you're doing another marathon. And I was like, no, I don't love running. I was like,
no,
I'm not even
loves running. Yeah.
No. And I was like, I'm not even good at endurance running. I was like, I'm good at sprinting. Like I am Jamaican. Mm. I should be sprinting. So the idea that, like, well, if you're doing a marathon, why, you know, you must be good at it, or you're not doing it. I said, no. I said, I'm doing this because it's hard, because it is such a physical challenge for me, emotional, mental challenge for me. I'm doing it because I want to practice what I preach. I don't want to be on this podcast telling people, you know, push your limits and challenge yourself and set goals if I'm just here, you know, not really challenging myself. So there was lots of reasons that I would personally kind of, yeah, challenge myself and share this message that was like, you know what? When things are hard, just accept they're hard instead of thinking, how can I make this easier? Or when will it, you know what, Adrienne, when's it going to get easier? Because I'm really, it might not, like it might not get easier, but you can do the hard thing. So hearing you say that, I was like, yes. I was like, Bex, I was like, this is kind of, you know, so on point. But I have to be honest, I feel like in the last few years, since the pandemic, something definitely has shifted. I felt like there's like a, you know, whether it's like the zeitgeist, whatever it was, this collective shift that was like, hang on a minute. This is really hard, okay? We're doing the pandemic, it's hard. We're homeschooling our kids, it's hard. We are afraid that our parents might die from this disease, it's hard. Like everyone was like so beat down that I feel like this idea of being like, you can do hard things, or like train for a marathon, or even like you said, hit the gym. People were just a bit like, oh my gosh, like leave me alone. Like I can't take another thing, which I understand. And it was kind of this, I don't know, that the message online was like, you know, this is toxic positivity. This is, you know, self-care means, you know, staying in bed. And I was kind of still advocating for this idea that, well, actually self-care can be, you know, doing the things that are going to serve you best, whether that's taking care of yourself, whether that's, you know, maybe going for a run today, maybe that is self-care. So yeah, I felt like I was kind of siloed and being like with this little flag of like, you can do hard things, and people be like, shush. Yeah, exactly.
No, just be in your sweatpants. You're fine.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think maybe it's coming. I think, you know, I understand, like I said, like globally, we shared this incredibly just bizarre and really, really, really difficult time. Honestly, like I said, homeschooling like gives me PTSD. But I really think that I think it's changing. I think people are kind of emerging out of the cocoon and being like, actually, you know what? Life is short. And as you said, sometimes things are going to be hard. But what's the alternative? If I don't pursue this thing, if I don't, you know, set myself a goal and actually put in the effort and the work to get it, what's the alternative? Like, does it feel good to kind of go, actually, you know what? It's hard, so I'm not going
to
bother.
Yeah. To cruise. I mean, 100%. It's that growth mindset, isn't it? It's kind of, what's the next challenge? Let's go. Let's attack this. Let's go. Where's the next mountain? I want to climb it. It's kind of like, you know, when you're training in the gym, you have to break down the muscles before they grow stronger. And I feel like that's has been a great metaphor for my life, that you constantly have to sort of make your body ache and hurt before it's actually going to get better, fitter, stronger. And I feel like it's like that in life. It's like every challenge that you accept and everything that's really hard is what actually, that's where you find your biggest parts of growth, isn't it? You know, I went through a divorce last year, and it was so difficult, just emotionally and financially. There were so many aspects of it that were just like, my God, it felt really brutal at times. And yet I really feel like I'm in such a better place now than I ever was. And I'm so thankful that I had the opportunity to go through something that stretched me so much. Had I not had to have gone through that challenge, I don't think I would be as, let's say, emotionally astute as I am. I mean, I'm not emotionally astute. I'm like a big 4-year-old, let's be honest. But let's say emotionally mature as I am today. So I'm really thankful for all of the hardships that I've had in my life.
All right. Right, well, let's talk a little bit about the power hour, because of course I couldn't let you go without asking you about the first hour of your day. I'm sure for some people who've listened to the show, they've heard, you know, people talking about really detailed routines, some people having, you know, something that they don't do every day. So for example, excluding things from the morning. But Bex, could you tell us, typically, what does the first hour of your day include?
Okay, so this one's a funny one for me because I obviously listen to your podcast and I don't really have a typical first hour. I don't really have like a typical anything in my life. I don't really like a lot of routine. I think it's probably going back to that challenge yourself, try something new, do something different quite a lot. But what I normally do is it depends on the time zone that I'm in. Because obviously I'm traveling quite a lot. I'm in LA, I'm in London, I'm, you know, in New Zealand, Australia. So it's always check my phone, check my messages, because I always want to make sure that the people that I love are happy and they're okay. And I want to know, you know, what's going on. So we have a family chat and partners and, you know, a couple of friends that every day is the first thing is, okay, where's everybody that I love in my life? What's the status? And so that's important for me. And then I don't really... I used to love coffee and caffeine. About 3 years ago, I cut out caffeine completely from my diet. And I promise, like, for me, it's been one of the best things I've done. I feel like I have so much more energy. So first thing I do is I drink like a big glass of water. And then it just depends. You know, some days I'll genuinely, because I have my own company, I'll genuinely just sit and do emails from bed on my phone for the first like 30 minutes. Sometimes I'll get up and I'll go to the gym. I can't run anymore, so I do a lot of Pilates and yoga. So that's always like a morning thing for me. But I really listen to my body. I really listen to where I'm at. If I've been traveling quite a lot, I try to just, if I need to doze, I'll doze for an hour. If I feel like I've been, you know, in one place for a while, I'll get up and I'll get up and go. If that's when I feel like I have the energy, I'll get up and I'll train. So. Yeah, that's kind of my power hour. A lot of
intuitive.
It is. Yeah, intuitive. It's really like going with what is right for me at that time.
And it takes time, doesn't it, to get to that point where you actually know what you need? I feel like that's something that I've been working on over the last few years.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, maybe I didn't really know. So I was kind of like autopilot, or I'm someone who works quite well to routine, and I would just kind of create a routine and be like, just follow these steps, you know. And that served me well, I think.
Good.
for some time. But I think it's interesting, we have different seasons, don't we, in our lives. And I think now I'm probably more in that season as well, of thinking, actually, what do I need? What's gonna kind of help me get done what I need to get done? And I think it takes time to be able to understand and listen and be as intuitive of as it sounds like you are.
100%. Do you know what's really interesting about that, Adrian? Is the seasons are really cool, because living in England, there's obviously like really hardcore seasons. It's like raining. You probably hear the rain right now.
Well, I was just about to say, we haven't even mentioned, I'm not sure if the listeners can hear the rain, but when you said you travel LA, UK, I was thinking, that's why you still are smiling, because I have been here for the last however many months, and I feel like this season is ready. I'm so ready for this season to change. Because
it's like Mordor season, I think.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting, because I find like in the winter months in England, I don't do well in the mornings. Like I can't get, that's it. I'm like, no. But in the summer, so I was back in LA a couple weeks ago and it's sunny. I'm up. Like I jump out of bed, the sun's shining. I'm like, where's the weights? Let's just lift some for 2 seconds and then off, and then I'll have a coffee and then I'll, you know, whatever. And in the winters in the UK, I just find like I really need to hibernate a bit more, and I'm fine with that. I'm cool, man.
Yeah.
Like, let's chill.
Yeah, I'm fine with it for a while, but I think, as I said, the Jamaican in me is like, okay, enough.
Do you know what I found recently? You can buy these lights that have like, started using it, because I think I have a little bit of SADS, like seasonal affect disorder. So I put on that light and I'm like, let's see if this makes me feel better. So
Yeah, I have it too. That's why this Friday. But this Friday, instead of buying one of those lights, I just booked flights instead.
Yeah.
I was like, honestly, I got to the point. I was like, get me out of here.
Where are you going?
We're going to Morocco.
Nice.
To Marrakesh.
That's one of my favorites. That is so good. There's great surfing in Morocco too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Like about a couple hours north of Morocco. It's like one of my favorite surf spots. Amazing.
Oh, you're so cool, Bex. No. I'm like, she's so cool. I'm like, you are cool, cool, cool. Well, thank you so, so much for joining today. I know the listeners are going to love this episode. Please let us know and share it with anyone else who you think would enjoy hearing from Bex as well. And stay tuned. As always, I'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks, Bex.
Thank you.